Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I mean, what's more football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slings.
Am I going to get sued?
You got legal on this?
Let's send you out on the right note. PFF sucks. Have a great day, everybody. Wow.
In three, two, one. Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Pelzola, Sam Monsonson. We're live-ish on YouTube. Today, huge show. We got JT O'Sullivan from the QB School to talk all things quarterback, Sam.
Yeah, it's going to look like we don't change our clothes for a while.
Yeah. We've been trying to, again, we're very candid with all of our listeners and viewers here. We've been trying to, you know, knock out a bunch of these interviews, high-level football conversations, and we got a bunch of them in the same day.
It turns out all of them are available the same morning.
They all said, can we do Thursday? Yeah. We stacked them up.
Right.
Thursday.
So, yeah, it's going to look like we don't change for a while.
So, it's an unexpected change to our life that we're not making. But is 2024 bringing exciting or unexpected changes to your life? There's a secret weapon to help you face those challenges with more confidence. It's a great term life insurance policy. That's right. Fabric by Gerber Life makes it simple to protect your family's financial future so you can focus on what's ahead, knowing your family is protected if something else unexpected happens. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget, like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in just minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. So join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect your family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. All right, man, let's get to JT O'Sullivan of the QB School talking all things quarterbacks. All right, we are excited to be joined by JT O'Sullivan, QB School, returning to the show. JT, how you doing, man?
I'm awesome, fellas. It's that time of year, man. Feels like football's ramping back up, fired up, talk some ball.
Yeah, we had a lot of requests for a repeat performance from JT. You were a popular guest last time you were on.
Uh-oh. Well, now you're setting the bar too high.
YouTube channel continues to grow. Patreon continues to grow. First off, just tell everybody where they can find all your stuff. But you are continuing to just take off and become the voice of QB teaching here.
Oh, man, you guys are being way too kind. Yeah, no, you nailed it. YouTube is the home base. Patreon is kind of the engine that makes it go. And try to have fun with that stuff all across kind of different social media platforms. But it's fun for me. Honestly, it's a blast for me because I just go after the things that I'm interested in, and I'm interested in QB play and high-level offense, and that's just kind of what I enjoy talking about.
So I did watch your QB rankings video, which, as you said, you're like, I hate you. You spent like 10 minutes prefacing how much you hate doing QB rankings, which I get, right? We've discussed so much on here. It's like, oh, you had this guy 3 and this guy 4, and you know, you're an idiot because, yeah. So I get all of it. But explain what your process is, how you put your rankings together, how much you hate the rankings, and what you actually do care about.
Oh, man. This could be the whole damn conversation.
Answer all the questions.
I hate the rankings. I hate rankings in general because I'm probably still recovering from being ranked is probably the first kind of variable. The second thing is I think they're a little bit lazy at some regard. Like, I really do. I feel like unless you can really show the methodology about how and why you got there, and I feel like that's one of the things that I really enjoy about this channel is how I basically share every video that I watch so you can kind of see the process of it. But I just hate when you see a talking head, you'll be like, yeah, I watched every single throw of every single guy getting drafted. I'm like, no, you just didn't. Like, I mean, you know, maybe people say that. I just don't think you did. And if you did, you know, you're not watching it with kind of a mindful, thoughtful eye and sighting, trying to project that into the Sunday game. And I just think it's really hard to do because I try to do it just as much video as I can, and it's tough. And so I just feel like the other part about it is I'm not tethered into the league enough to know, you know, what's a good fit, what's someone, you know, who's drafting where, what the need is, those types of things. To me, when I do my rankings, I try to watch the film. I know some of these guys a very little bit, which I do think blurs my process, because if I get to know them a little bit, I have to feel like that impacts it a little bit with the bias. But then just which guys would I want to call plays for, or what guy would I want in what order to play for my offense? And that's kind of the way I go about it, just to make sense for me. But whatever you do, my way is so incomplete compared to what the league does and what many other places do. And so it's just one of those things where it's my little lens into, you know, who I would pick each year, and it inevitably will blow up on me in a couple years.
All of us.
If you're coming to a player completely fresh, you know, the first time you've watched this guy, how many tapes before you're like comfortable saying, all right, I've got a handle on what he is, I feel pretty good about my projection, I feel good about where I've ranked this guy, how much are you watching?
I mean, till I feel good, literally never.
Right.
I mean, I just don't. Like a guy, for instance, a guy like Caleb Williams this year, I feel like I've probably watched, you know, over 75% of his all 22 over the course of his career, just because I enjoyed that offense. I was mesmerized when he first came in the league. I like, you know, what USC does. I'm a Southern California guy. I've watched a lot of it, and I still don't necessarily feel like, you know, 100% this is going to be great. Absolutely. It's just one of those things where I don't think you can ever do that. And honestly, the more I do this, the less comfortable I feel about any of the projections. But I think I try to watch at least the three most recent games before I kind of feel like I've got somewhat of a kind of idea about, hey, this guy has a volume of talent and arm capacity that will translate to the league or not. And even if I feel like they don't, it's not a disqualifier. It's just like, maybe these were the three worst games. Like, you turn on Drake May,
right?
And, you know, the last couple of games were not the best games. So it's one of those things where, like, you know, you got to keep digging to a certain extent. And saying this draft class especially, I felt like there were guys that deserved and needed deeper dives, and probably even deeper dives than I even did watching, you know, the handful, half a dozen per guy and sharing it that is required to make those kind of decisions.
One of the storylines that we've been following over the last couple of years is the idea that the NFL is not good at evaluating the quarterbacks. So say, like, let's use that as the theory, right? The NFL is not good at evaluating quarterbacks, or the hit rate on quarterbacks is low relative to other positions. Do you buy that? Do you think that's true? Or do you think there are ways to potentially improve evaluating quarterbacks and projecting them? I, as difficult as you say it is, are there better ways to project them from college to the NFL?
I mean, I don't know if there are better ways. I would push back. My immediate pushback would be, you know, are they better at certain positions than others? You know, I don't have the data in front of me. I've never been interested enough to look into it. But I would imagine you probably do have a better hit rate at other positions, because more than one guy can play almost every position, if that makes sense.
Yep.
You know, like, you know, if you draft a tackle, he doesn't work, you throw him over to right tackle. You know, you draft an edge, you got another edge. You know, those types of things that I think allow for a little bit more flexibility. I also think it's higher profile for sure.
Yep.
You know, the other part about drafting a quarterback, especially early, it usually means that your team is not very good. You know, that's the other part that hurts a lot of fans' feelings, that, you know, if there's a reason that you're drafting a quarterback early, the reality is that your team probably hasn't performed well enough over the course of the last couple seasons. And so going to a tough situation is a hell of a lot harder than, you know, being a top 10 pick as an edge and filling in one role on an already really good roster.
And I think the standards are higher as well, right? Like, there are other positions where if you become a solid NFL starter, it's good. It's a good pick. You did well in the draft. If you're a solid slash okay NFL starter or quarterback, you're the guy everybody's looking to try and replace in a couple of years' time, because that's not good enough anymore. So it's a tough spot for being just the bar being set so high. It was interesting to hear you say that the more you do this, almost the less comfortable you feel with the projections going forward. I sort of feel the same thing is true from our perspective as well, with all the data that's available, right? The year on year on year, there's sort of more pieces of information, more data points, more more numbers, more weight of evidence to what these specific data points actually mean or how well they project. And you almost end up just getting paralyzed by the sheer volume of information. Like, we knew that this was a thing, and now we think we should weigh it higher, and you just it's not getting any easier.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. You guys are swimming in it for sure, and I don't, you know, pretend to make sense of it, but I can tell you anecdotally, this stuff used to grind me when I was playing. You know, when they would do installs, and they probably still do it the same way. Like, you would do your situational install. Let's say it's third down, and the team went back and did like a four game kind of recap on the four last opponents. And they'd be like, all right, third and long, these guys play, you know, 75% drop eight Tampa. And you'd be like, you know, all right, well, that's pretty good. If we know 75%, we're going to get it. That's great. And then you look at the snaps, and there's only four snaps. They did three of them all, like, with 30 seconds left to go and a blowout. And you're like, well, that doesn't mean we can't. That literally is garbage. I don't even want that number in my head.
Right.
And so, you know, the capacity to make sense of that stuff is certainly, you know, it's difficult for many people. And so the way to swim through it and try to make through it, you know, it's one of those things for me. I think it's really hard to hold that comprehensive idea of being able to take, decipher out what the important data is and whatever that important, you know, handful of metrics that you can make sense of and project it onto somebody's game when you don't know where the hell they're going to go, you know, this time of year, in a fit, in a system, in a scheme, in a talent around them, all those types of things. It doesn't feel like it makes it easier.
At a high level, just looking at this class, how many guys would you say are starting caliber, have starting ability, just, you know, high level looking at the QB class right now?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even want to put a ceiling on the guys that I'm not going to mention. I think that the top six-ish guys are guys for sure that will get an opportunity to start at some point over the course of their career. You know, to me, that I don't. There are probably more guys that I didn't necessarily dive into. I know people wanted me to do the Tulane guy. I just couldn't get the film. You know, I think Nix, Penix, May, McCarthy, Caleb, and Jaden are all guys that are going to get an opportunity to play really quickly. And, you know, what that looks like, who knows where the hell they end up and all those types of things. But those six guys, to me, feel like guys that absolutely would get a chance to be, you know, everyday starters in the league at some point.
So I think Caleb Williams has now kind of become the consensus top guy. He seems almost certainly going to get drafted at number one to Chicago. How good do you think he is relative to, you know, the last several draft classes? Because I think the last couple of weeks, that started to become the conversation, right? He's now getting some of that Trevor Lawrence talk of the best prospect since.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not a great guy to ask because I think I had Justin ahead of Trevor. But, you know, I love Caleb Williams' game. I mean, I feel like, you know, I know people over the course of the summer, you know, had he and Drake May kind of more in a neck-to-neck type situation, I would say, if you would talk to people who actually had already watched the film.
Right.
I just think Caleb brings a more robust set of skills immediately into an NFL team. And so he can do the dynamic thing for sure. He's got all the clubs as far as the arm talent. I think when you turn on the film, you do have to be a little bit wary of just the way he protects the ball. Now, is that how he plays, or is that how they let him play? And so it'll be a combination of things. I would imagine that stuff gets polished up quicker in the Sunday game, just because the ball security is such a priority, and he won't have to hopefully play, you know, the hero ball, you know, every single third down. You know, in the fall. But those types of things definitely are a concern when you turn on the film and you just see how he carries it. You know, if I'm noticing it, every NFL defensive line coach is noticing it. Every unit will be, you know, going after it, those types of things. And then you talk about him holding on to the ball and, you know, that being kind of an issue in Chicago that they've had to deal with over the last couple of years. I personally think it's a little bit different with his ability, what he's doing when he's holding on to the ball. I don't think it's necessarily apples to apples as far as what Justin was doing holding on to the ball. And so his ability, Caleb's ability to kind of create in the pocket and stay alive and be that guy who can buy time and reset and still deliver the ball down the field is a different skill set than I would say what they were dealing with Justin and holding on to the ball in Chicago. So, you know, those types of things. But if you're a Chicago Bears fan, man, and you get, you know, opportunity to draft Caleb Williams, you're going to be pretty damn excited.
I think because of the success of Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar, you know, some of the other quarterbacks who can do special stuff off schedule, over the last 7 or 8 years, it's like, okay, that's when that, when you see that, like Caleb Williams' natural playmaking ability is out of this world. But then you go back and say, okay, for Mahomes to become Mahomes, for Allen to become Allen, for Lamar to become Lamar, they had to win from the pocket within structure and do some stuff where Caleb Williams doesn't do it often relative to others in the class, maybe. What are your thoughts on that, his development? Can he win within structure? What does he need to learn maybe to get to superstardom that maybe some of these other guys have achieved?
I'm sure there'll be a growth curve for what he's asked to do. But I push back a little bit to the thing that he can't win within the pocket. I think when you turn on the film, there is evidence of him consistently, when he has time and he's got the capacity to work through a read, to be on time within the pocket. I think things get overshadowed when you make so many Superman ridiculous throws and you are so explosive outside the pocket. But I think he showed that he certainly can play within the structure of that system. The other thing about it is that system. Okay, now I'm someone, again, I've already said my bias, Southern California guy. I really like the Lincoln Riley system. I liked it a little, probably even better in Oklahoma when it was a little bit more gap centric too, with what they were doing in the run game. For whatever reason, the run game feels like it's not the same yet quite at USC, whether that's, you know, upfront talent or whatever. It just felt like he was asked to play a little bit different when he got to USC versus what they were doing. Kind of the guys who, what I mean by that is comparing like the Hurts, Kyler, Baker in that system to be able to play a little bit more on schedule with what they were doing at Oklahoma versus what they've been able to do at USC.
Do you, my one question about that offense, though, it felt like they didn't have great blitz answers last year versus previously. Is that, do you agree, disagree?
I mean, I definitely, the outcome, the execution of it looked the same. I can't imagine it wasn't the same. I would say that, you know, again, I'm not a certified guy in that system, but I will say that the talent that Caleb was playing with around him didn't look the same as maybe it's looked at in previous years at USC, whether that's up front and on the perimeter. And I think they just got exploited, and he felt like, and again, I'm just projecting, but watching his play look like he felt like he had to make so many plays that sometimes he got out of there and created maybe a little bit earlier than he probably should have.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So is that how you explain away the sort of uptick in his, I guess, big mistakes last year, right? It sort of felt he was on this Patrick Mahomes trajectory for a little bit, where it was like he's able to do these things that you're not supposed to do. And the thing that makes Mahomes special is he's always getting away with them. Like, almost never when he throws back across his body with a ridiculous arm angle into traffic, it doesn't end up getting picked off. He's the one guy that's been able to make it work all the time. And Caleb Williams was that guy up until last year. And then last year he started to get it caught up with him a bit. And there were a lot of those plays where, you know, he's throwing into the, he's doing the thing you're not supposed to do, and it gets picked off this time.
I mean, I don't want to be here and feel like I'm a apologist for him, but I will say that it's a different feeling playing quarterback or being tethered to an offense when you feel like every game is a race to 50.
Yeah.
You know, and you know you're going to have to score a certain amount of points to be successful, you know, especially in that conference. That conference was really great last year. And so it was, you know, it felt like you're playing basically a basketball game every single week out there. And so you do probably have to push it a little bit harder than you'll have to push it on a Sunday week in to week out basis. But yeah, I think I can't disagree, Sam, with what you're saying as far as when you turn on the film from year to year to see kind of how he played. It definitely felt looser. A little bit more erratic at times with him being able to pull some of those things off.
All right, so you have Jaden Daniels as your definitive two. Hold your feet to the fire. This will never change ever. Jaden Daniels. But then I couldn't help but notice on the video, you got to QB3 and there was a long pause, dramatic pause, JT, dramatic pause when you were like J.J. McCarthy, then Drake May. But it's a coin flip. So unpack this 2-3-4 for us.
I mean, I would even say 2-3-4-5 for me.
Okay.
You know, I would probably put, for me personally, Bo Nix as the guy who's not in that conversation. I know that's probably a different conversation, but I really liked watching Jaden Daniels this year on film. I thought he, you know, showed significant improvement with his ability, not only decision making, performance, execution, but just his consistency. Thought his stroke looked outstanding. You know, I thought he was able to drive the ball down the field in that system. Now, again, he's throwing to dudes, and I get that, but so was Joe Burrow. And so it's one of those things where, like, you know, you're not going to apologize for playing with really good players. I think when you couple that with the fact that he is a legitimate lightning rod running the ball. I mean, he is dynamic and can stride out. Now, sometimes he gets smoked and hit really hard, and that's never going to work in the league. And he's going to have to learn to protect himself because he's got that, you know, roadrunner vibes. But that package and his performance, what he did this year, I thought it was just so consistent, so impressive that for me, he deserved that spot and made that spot a little bit easier than the 3-4 spot. The 3-4 spot for me, and you talk about specifically probably Drake May and J.J. McCarthy, but the Drake May thing for me is, and you turn on the film and you see so many ridiculous plays. I mean, it's so, every half there's a throw that you're like, what did I just see? You know, whether it's left-handed, whether it's a massive chuck down the field, it's just crazy impressive. And I fall in love with that stuff. Like, that explosiveness, I think, makes the position fun. But then you see some misses and you're like, I remember I had to go back multiple times. I rarely look at like the box score to see the weather, but I was like, is it raining? Like, why are we skipping hitches? Why are we, you know, bouncing these balls? And the miss radius, I just felt, it felt like it was so inconsistent, and it I couldn't get a handle on it. I really couldn't. I don't know what it is. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to give you like the biomechanical kind of like take about, oh, he's leaning or he's stepping or his toe or is a you know, that type of stuff. I can't tell from the all 22, but I can tell you that you don't see guys who play in the league on Sundays very often skip hitches. And so that part of it to me is just like the inconsistency of the ball placement. Yeah. And everybody wants to say, oh, the feet, the stroke, I mean, whatever, whatever it is, it's not as consistent as I would want for taking someone, you know, potentially in the top three.
Are you big into, you know, quarterback mechanics and all that kind of stuff? Because I read an article recently on The Athletic by Ted Wynn, I think, that was talking to a bunch of, you know, private individual QB coaches to evaluate the mechanics, the throwing mechanics of all these top guys. And it was surprisingly complimentary about Drake May. It didn't have, like, they weren't all ripping his mechanics apart and saying this is why he's missing all these throws. There was a bit about the footwork, as you said, but the rest of it was all like his motion is fine, the rest of his mechanics are good, but he still like misses all these throws.
Yeah, I like that article. I'm a big fan of Ted, and I like that article. Yeah. I kind of grin because, like, yeah, those guys aren't going to say shit about this guy because they want to work with him. Like, you're not going to be like the one guy and be like, oh, you got no chance. You know, it's terrible. I get it. I will also say I'm not, like, I do not pretend to be an expert in biomechanics and in that kind of kinesiology world. I will say that I'm fascinated by it. I'm super curious about it. I've got friends that are deep into it. I will tell you, and I will kind of use the analogy for you guys because you're in that kind of, like, research world, you know, with all this data. They can put a bunch of things on you and they can measure all these different things and they can tell you, you know, like, oh, you know, this quarterback did it like this, that quarterback did it like this. It doesn't necessarily, it feels like it's so tip of the spear, like frontier stuff as far as making sense of, okay, that's the measurement. How do we maximize your efficiency to be as consistent as possible? It feels a little bit like we're still making stuff up when you get all the way to the front of how they're using that information.
Right.
But I think you also look, I'll put it this way, and I don't know who Drake May works with as far as his personal coach, but I think you look at the rest of the guys that I would classify in that top six-ish, they look more polished to me. Like, they look more consistent. They look more fluid. You know, those terms that you hear from guys who live in that world as far as being smooth, fluid, consistent, solid, powerful base, all those kinds of, like, jargon words. The other guys look more polished. Now, that can be a double-edged sword. because you can be like, you know, everybody wants to talk about Josh Allen. You could be like, well, you come in there with the raw skills and we'll make you, you know, a lot of coaches feel like, oh, we'll coach you up. We'll get that. Well, the reality is that not really how a lot of quarterback coaches work in the league. It's a lot more scheme centric.
Right.
And so, you know, does Drake May have the team around him to be able to make those kind of, you know, polished choices, decisions, improvement? I don't see why he wouldn't. But right now, like right now, when you turn on the film, the most recent games, the inconsistency is one of those things that I don't know how you talk your way around it.
It's such a huge variable when you're talking about these guys that, you know, everyone sort of, now you talk about players in terms of, do they need to sit for a year or do they start right away, right? And the idea being, if you sit for a year, he's going to develop and improve and get coached up for that year. But then you've also got guys like Kyle Shanahan out there basically saying, they basically don't touch the quarterbacks from as soon as the season starts, right? Because it's all week-to-week install, it's scheme, it's game plan. Like, he's not getting better from week one till the end of the season. So this idea of sitting for a year might not be doing anything for him depending on where he lands.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's one of those things where you wouldn't want to be out there on a Tuesday, you know, working on your biomechanics and
right.
think that you're going to play on Sunday at a high level. Like, it's just not, it takes a significant amount of work. And there are people who are quote unquote experts that a lot of these guys use and go to. And I think they are really great at it. But, you know, without being in the room, without knowing exactly what his team is doing and where he ends up, you know, that's the other thing we haven't talked that much about. But so much of it is luck and fit and development and that lens and all those things married together that I personally am not, and I'm selfishly, as I ramble, I'm still close enough to missing on Herbert so badly that I feel like I can see enough of the same type of like, whoa, probably more with Drake May in his college film to be like, you know, you do that consistently, you're going to be a really special player in the league. But, you know, you also, you throw a bounce, a hitch to somebody, to a wide receiver in the NFL, and they're going to be like, dog, what? Who the hell is this? What?
I do
don't let that. Your personal biases get in so much. Oh, no, I missed on Herbert. Don't let it sway things.
I do love that because every year you do that. Like, the funny thing is you can identify the guys that you are going to be affected by this year based off last year.
Yeah.
Like, I missed on this guy, so I know for a fact that coming up this year, it's going to change my view of a couple of players.
There's just not enough data in all this. Like, if I was looking at NFL history, like, there was a point where Brett Favre came into the league with, you know, a cannon for an arm, with no polish, with bad college stats, but, like, the Packers traded for him. They're like, he has it. And then they put him in the West Coast offense, and he did. And then we went through this stretch of, like, the Blaine Gabberts and Jake Lockers of the world who had all these tools and never panned out. And then Josh Allen bucked the trend as the guy that, like, figured out accuracy at the NFL level. And so it's like there's no pattern to these things. And then then there's the recency bias, right? Like, Herbert didn't look great. He got worse as his college career went on. And then, like, instantly as an NFL rookie, it's like, oh, Herbert's good. And he's got RPMs and he's got stuff that these other dudes don't have. It is such a tough process.
And, I mean, the other thing that has clouded my judgment anecdotally is, you know, the portal thing and the changing schools, to me, I used to really have a negative association to it. Like, oh, dog, you couldn't cut it there. You got to go. You know, you had to go somewhere else. Where now, it's essentially a non-factor. In fact, it might.
Or a positive. You. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things. And then the other thing about the Herbert thing about getting worse, I would also say that you look at Purdy's film in college. I would say that he struggled more the longer he was there.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where making sense of that stuff, it just, to me, it just reaffirms how much of this is a crapshoot and we're just rolling the dice to a certain extent.
I could go really down the rabbit hole of the biomechanics thing and everything because I went through this as a pitcher because I was sitting there as an undrafted 6'10 free agent, JT. And I was like, I'm throwing 88. I know I could throw 95. Let me study this stuff. But like, as an adult, it's tough to make mechanical changes. And if you remember when Tim Tebow was at Florida, his sophomore year, they were doing specials on how he was going to this biomechanics expert and changing his throwing motion. He goes to the NFL, they're doing specials on how he's changing his throwing motion. Tebow still has the same throwing motion, right? Like, some guys can change things and some guys can't. And
it's like a golf swing. Like, once you're in there, like,
your throws ingrained from when you're like eight years old.
Yeah.
Like, you have mechanics that are ingrained when you are very young.
You can see people on the golf course that are like old guys that clearly didn't start playing golf until they were old guys, because their swing is this weird jacked up thing, and there's no way of fixing that. It's done. Like, that is how he swings a golf club. Right. You needed to pick the club up 25 years before you did. Now it's what it is, and that's what we're stuck with.
So we don't know if Drake May is ever going to change, figure it out. The layups and the easy stuff keep coming up, JT. You're not the only one. I see the same thing. Mm-hmm. Then it's just like, how do you weigh it? Like, how do you weigh this? Because it's like, it's the easy stuff. It's the layups. Like, of course you should be able to figure out the layups, but we don't know if he will be able to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't pretend to know. I will tell you.
That's why you're here.
As someone who changed their throwing motion multiple times as a pro, I basically went from a guy coming into the league as probably a little bit more wind-up-y to then my first kind of camp league situation. The coaches were like, hey, we got to quicken this up. And I basically overcorrected and became like a dart thrower. And then I couldn't feel like I could push the ball everywhere that I wanted to. And it eventually kind of relapsed into my more normal stroke as I kind of defaulted into a smoother, more loopy thing that is maybe a little bit more acceptable now. It's tough, man. It took significant intentional off-season work.
Right.
And I was by no means a guy with a team of people. It's just, you know, kind of like filming yourself, getting used to it, feeling what's comfortable, feeling your most powerful. I feel like these guys have so many better resources available to them now, and they understand the throw, the rotational element of it so much better that maybe you can hopefully, you know, make those changes quicker. But I mean, you know, especially your first year, this year is so damn long, because you go college football, draft cycle, and then you're playing. You know, you're a top three guy, you're playing. And so good luck out there.
One of the things that's kind of been true all the way through this process seems to be this idea that the NFL likes J.J. McCarthy more than everybody else, whether it's draft analysts, just the public, whatever. Do you buy into that? And if so, do you know why? Do you see why from his tape?
I've not thought about that for 1 second. Sorry, I don't buy into it. But I can tell you that the J.J. McCarthy film for me was tough, because they're just, you know, you watch games and he's throwing 12 times.
Right.
And as someone who's called plays, I'm like, if I had a guy who was going to be a top 10 NFL draft pick potentially, we would be spinning that thing. And I get it that Michigan knew exactly what they were doing, and you're dealing with a whole different animal with Harbaugh, that element of it. But for me, it is hard to make sense of, you know, why he wasn't given a little bit more of an opportunity to do that. That's just me selfishly. Like, I wanted him to throw as just a fan of quarterback play. But when I turn on the film, again, I thought he looks really polished. You know, I love the way I've heard a couple people say, oh, you know, he's a little bit erratic, or he's not consistent with his base. I thought he looked as polished as anybody. What I'm talking about is like being lined up to your left, like dovetailing that drop, having a consistent, powerful base. He can certainly rip it. He throws everything like a, you know, a fastball type thing. I think if you could be critical of the throws that he misses or doesn't make or isn't asked to make, those touched, layered throws, you know, aren't consistently on his film. But there's a lot that's not on consistently on his film, because they're beating the brakes off people and he's throwing 12 times a game. But when you watch the entire season, I think you see enough impressive throws that make me feel like he's got every club in the bag. You certainly would love to see maybe the touch become a little bit more consistent, but there's a lot to like. You know, as far as the league falling in love with him, you know, I think you start getting into a little bit more underlying issues potentially when you start talking about that, those types of things, than necessarily just the film.
I think you hit on a lot of what people struggle with that evaluation, right? It's volume, carrying the team, the touch throws. But you're right. I mean, I see him like reset, rip into tight windows, and just, I'm like, wow, those are, I think when you grab, it might take 6 or 7 games, but when you grab all of his good stuff and put it together, it's there. How challenging is that? Because the guys you're just describing, Caleb feels like he's got to carry the team. Drake May feels like he's got to carry the team. He lost his top receiver, and that, you know, Tez Walker's not there most of the year in the line and all that. And then JJ's out there, and they're like, we got Penn State, biggest game of the year. You don't even have to chuck it, you know, the last 38 plays, because we got 15 tight ends out there. It's just, it's like completely different worlds.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's hard for me, because I'm kind of the I don't know, oxymoron element of being a quarterback. I love the run game. So that part of it is fun for me to like turn on the all 22 and just watch how Michigan handles the dominance at the line of scrimmage. But as far as the quarterback, you know, it definitely makes it difficult because at some point, you know, you don't get to play East Carolina, you know, when you're on Sundays. You know, that's no shot. That's and anybody, you know, their schedule was their schedule and they beat the hell out of people all up and down the schedule. But he's going to have to be able to be that playmaker, that creator, that guy who can put the team on his back, you know, execute a 2-minute consistently on Sundays. And it's just, you just don't know, you know, it's just not there enough. And so I think that there is enough there. To me, the differentiator for me between those two, Drake May and JJ McCarthy, were just, I thought McCarthy had more consistent elements of his game that I thought would be more consistent for us, for an NFL team, versus the crazy highs and the crazy lows of what maybe the Drake May film was.
The sort of one speed element of his throwing is interesting because it was one of the first things I had down on my notes as well. And I've seen a lot of people say that. I couldn't believe how many people pushed back on that when I first brought it up on this podcast. And yet I know Steve hates talking to the haters, but it's obvious. It's one of his biggest problems is almost everything is the same fastball. There's no touch to his tape relative to some of these other guys.
Well, I mean, when you can rip it, you know, let it rip,
right,
to a certain extent. But yeah, you know, again, part of me comes back to they're not asking him to do those. You don't know. I think I could push back and say, I want to say it was the East Carolina game that I just referenced, that he throws a couple deep corners that are beautiful throws that are up on the guy's face, outside the numbers, wide hashes. I think he was like 3 for 4 on it. And one of them, he could have been an interception, turnover worthy, interceptable.
There we go.
Nice.
But
good reference there. Stick with turnover worthy. That was my I created turnover worthy. So please stick with that terminology. Thank you.
Either way, that's one game.
Yeah.
You know, and I had to basically, someone had to tell me, you know, go back and look at right. this game because he does throw those balls this way. You know, that's probably not a great sign.
Yeah, yeah. When you have to go looking for the play.
Games and you got to go one game early in the year in September to see some touch throws. So, yeah, it's a problem.
That's how I always felt like if I had a great game pitch and I'm like, oh, man, if the scouts just saw that one game, I was great control and looked nothing like anything else, but it was my best game.
It could still work for you.
Oh, I mean, I saw that too. I mean, I saw a guy get called up because he had a good weekend just because the front office was there in person.
Yeah.
He was hitting 100 for the year. He goes 3 for 4 back-to-back games, and he's in the big leagues the next week because they saw it. I mean, that's like the human nature element of evaluation.
Every sport, not just like football, but whether it's draft, whether it's free agency, guys are still getting signed because the last time they played that team, they had an amazing game against them. You see it in the draft. You see it in other sports. I mean, soccer, Liverpool blew $80 million or whatever on Darwin Nunez because they played him in the Champions League, and he was out of his mind
crazy
in that game. Everywhere. It's part of human nature, unfortunately.
You put Michael Penix in with that group, right? Is that fair? He's your five, but kind of in that mix with JJ and Drake May?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if Michael would have been healthy his entire career, you know, ifs and buts, or candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas, right? But if he were healthy his entire career, and we didn't see that last game, I think he would absolutely be in that conversation.
That's our entire narrative there, JT. Well, how much do you weigh the last game and the Texas game? How do you handle those two things?
I mean, I think you have to – the harder thing for me to make sense of is he looked so different when things weren't clean, when things were felt like they were, you know, coming in on him, and the pressure element, not pressure of the moment, but pressure.
Right.
That looked a lot that's what Sundays are. And you're constantly dealing with that.
And it's so the volume of it.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. And it's sort of the volume of it. Cause that I feel a little bit the way about him in that scenario, the way we did about Baker Mayfield, where in college he didn't have any of that. And yet, when you ramped, or he had some of it, and he did quite well in those situations, but suddenly when you change the volume of those plays, and in the NFL, like you said, that's a hell of a lot more of your NFL Sunday than it is in college most weeks. When you change the ratio of good plays to bad plays situationally, his behavior in those situations changes. So that was a glimpse on the one hand of what it's going to look like on Sunday, and that wasn't good.
Yeah, it absolutely didn't help. I think the other part that's hard for me to make sense of is he tested really well running,
yeah,
and explosive, but right. Then you turn on the film and that's not there.
Right.
And it's not that they might not be asking him to run like a true duel, but I'm talking about even moving. Like, you know, some of these guys are so much more explosive, fluid in their how they play and how they can extend and buy time and be creative outside the pocket, that didn't translate like some of the other guys maybe higher in the draft that we've already talked about. And then the other thing is, man, I thought he made some really nice throws, and I think he's got this, you know, he does have a unique kind of, you know, I call it Philip Riversy push, you know, yeah, to it. That used to bother me a lot until I was around Philip, and he could spin it like, you know, one of the better ones that I was ever around. And I think Michael can spin it like that too when he's on time, in rhythm, and can do that. But he also felt like he missed a bunch of shots down the field that, you know, he was throwing to dudes as well. And,
yeah,
you know, for as many big plays as they had, felt like every other time, you know, we missed a big post. And so it just wasn't as consistent as I thought the guys who I put in the top three were.
That's why the mechanics conversation, to me, it's like people said Philip Rivers doesn't have a good mechanics. It's like he throws the ball hard where he wants it to go. That is literally what mechanics are supposed to do. And then I heard about other prospects, a Christian Hackenberg, who has good mechanics, but it actually doesn't come out that great relative to what people think, and he misses. It's like, how can that be good? Like, your whole point is to get to a release point that you want. If it's not doing that, it's like, so that's why the mechanics thing is fascinating to me. But Penix does have that push. I think he's got good velocity on it and everything, but yeah, it's far more inconsistent than, say, a Philip Rivers, who was unbelievable.
I'd actually already passed up the opportunity to drop a Christian Hackenberg reference earlier in the show. I figured, it's
streak alive.
It's
97 straight shows where we have taken a shot at Christian Hackenberg.
Jesus.
Sorry, Hack. Just saying.
I wanted to add two of your favorite topics together, JT. Quarterback play and nepotism. Have you watched much of Shedeur Sanders for next year? I see you have a post on it somewhere.
I told you not to go down the nepotism route. Come on.
Yeah, that's tough. I did. I watched the first, I think, three-ish games of them last year. And, I mean, I don't know how you couldn't have been really impressed with what they did, you know, to pull those games off. I thought they would be absolutely overwhelmed up front, and they held up in those three games. A different story the rest of the year. But I thought Shedeur Sanders, you know, was pretty impressive. I actually watched him a handful of times at Jackson State, and it probably was less impressive than he was those first three games. I think he's a guy who you can tell is polished. You know, he probably doesn't have the top-end velocity that you would associate maybe with some guys who are like, you know, elite arm talent. But I thought there was a lot to be, you know, excited about. We'll see what it looks like this year. You know,
yeah.
Someone told me, you know, I saw the clip about trying to pull an Eli or things like that. I think that there are guys who in the next class that are probably a little bit more talented arm-wise. Doesn't mean that they're better quarterbacks. You know, we'll see how it all shakes out. But the nepotism thing, you just putting it right on a tee for me. It's a little bit, and this is where people get sideways with me. There's definitely nepotism when you're playing your kid at quarterback at Power 5 school. Like, let's not get it twisted. But the nepotism thing to me is a little bit easier to explain away when you're talking about playing.
Right.
You know, that because the playing part of it is so, I think of it at most levels once you get past like Little League youth sports as very, you know, merit-based. It's pretty hard to play not the best player in a professional sporting event. Like, right, you're just not going to do that. And the same thing, you know, collegiate sports are basically professional sports. And so that part of it, you know, it is what it is. I personally don't know if I would love being a quarterback on a team where the quarterback's, you know, the kid of the head coach. Doesn't feel like a great environment for me, but certainly doesn't mean that's not right for somebody else.
There's also, I mean, there's a pretty solid chance that, like, the children of Deion Sanders are going to be genetically quite predisposed to be good at football. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Let's touch on Bo Nix really quick. You said you have him as the six, maybe a tick below some of the other guys. My question for all the Bo Nix analysis is, how much did you watch Auburn? How much did you watch Oregon? And then have you ever seen, I mean, I always use the reference, it looked like he went from playing like Jay Cutler to playing like Alex Smith stylistically. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in college or maybe ever.
Well, no one's ever seen that much football played in college, right? Like he played more than anybody ever.
Yeah, maybe he just needed more people to play longer.
Bill Parcells used to say he wanted at least 30 starts from the quarterbacks he was going to draft. Bo Nix has done that twice. So just saying, he is twice as good as any Bill Parcells QB prospect. Discuss.
He get drafted twice.
And he started the Senior Bowl, too, just higher.
No, I mean, I probably did watch too much Auburn. I live in a household where we got some War Eagle over here that we watch a lot of Auburn football with my mother-in-law. But it's one of those things where I think it's really impressive that he went on and kind of changed scenery and was able to kind of find his way. You know, I think time will tell whether that was Bo Nix and his improvement or it was Oregon and what they were asking him to do. Again, you know, when I see Oregon colors and I see guys throwing RPOs and things at the line of scrimmage, you know, I, you know, shudder and start, you know, having, you know, Herbertism vibes. But like, you know, I think it's really impressive how well he took care of the ball, how well he looked like he was, you know, in control and things just felt easier versus kind of the craziness of what I associated his game with at Auburn. I do think that he's still has those erratic moments that will make it life difficult to be consistent in the league. You know, we'll see what that looks like. At some point, you have to push the ball down the field and you can't throw it, you know, every single thing be at the line of scrimmage, screen or RPO. And it's not saying those are bad things. And, you know, he's not calling plays. But the reality is when you turn on the film, there's a lot of that. That's not a disqualifier. It's just that's the reality of, you know, how you get a crazy high completion percentage in Power 5 football.
I might put you on the spot a little bit here, but do you have any wide receiver takes? Because obviously when you're watching all the film, you have pretty strong opinions on what the supporting cast looks like. Any of the LSU guys or Troy Franklin from Oregon, anybody stand out there?
Yeah, I mean, they all stand out. You know, to be honest with you, it's one of those things where I remember watching the Washington and LSU film being like, damn, which one is Neighbors? Like, these guys are blowing by people, like crazy double moves, crazy explosive. So, no, I don't have, like, any sort of, like, hot take rankings other than the fact that the dudes at Washington and Oregon and LSU look like they could all walk into an NFL huddle and play immediately.
Fair. That's all we're looking for.
And they may well, all of them.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like a loaded receiver class, and most of them are draft eligible, and most of them are going to be picked day one or two. So, anything else? Spencer Rattler or any of the other guys you wanted to touch on? Joe Milton, does he have the best arm you've ever seen? Anything to leave us with here?
He does, right?
Yeah.
I'm ready. I don't know who's playing quarterback for Tennessee next year, but I'm ready to take a break from trying to watch that Tennessee film.
We took so much heat last year because we were like, Jalin Hyatt, he's so tough to evaluate because he just runs straight with, you know, out of the slot, and the receivers are tough, and Hendon Hooker's tough. And our haters were mad at us for saying we can't evaluate this Tennessee offense. So glad you're with us for the NFL.
It would be fun though to play in it. I'm not gonna lie, yeah. I would love to play in it. The space in it is amazing,
and it was great. I mean, it crushed college. It's just it's not applicable to what the NFL is.
And I've tried to learn the vertical choice stuff multiple times. It's really cool. It's one of those things where, you know, none of it is transferable throws, or not much of it is transferable throws as far as anticipation, timing, rhythm, even the ball locations. The spacing is totally crazy. I think the Spencer Rattler thing is interesting just because, you know, I associate him as a national recruit for a long time. Feels like he's been on the stage for a long time. I think he's a really great natural thrower. Like, it looks smooth. It looks how it's supposed to look. And then you turn on the film and you just get frustrated, you know, whether it's the decision making, whether it's the consistency, the ball location, you know, all those types of things just aren't as good as, man, it's just the stroke of it looks outstanding. And it's one of those things where, you know, hopefully he gets into an opportunity where he can be one of those guys that maybe sits a little bit, develops, learns, and then when he gets his opportunity, makes the most of it.
Well, JT, we always appreciate it. Love the discussion. Tell everybody where they can hear more and subscribe and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate the conversation, fellas. It's always a blast. I'm a YouTube guy, so the Quarterback School on YouTube, Patreon community is kind of the thing that makes it go. And just like talking ball.
Awesome. Well, again, our people love when we have you on here. So hope to do it again, and appreciate you taking the time.
Anytime. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks, JT. All right, that was great. Always love having JT on the show. Good insight. And I can see that he's wrestling with the same thing that we wrestle with, which is putting out quarterback rankings.
Yeah, and haters.
And haters.
Right.
Yeah.
Always
got to address the haters. Now, he's getting huge now. He's over 350,000
oh, yeah.
YouTube subscribers.
Yeah, his channel is massive.
We need him to promote us a little bit more, you know? That's
the promoters are now the promotees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always nice to help a little guy like JT help build his brand a little bit.
Help him double our channel.
No, it's great. I mean, I was watching his QB ranking show, and again, he was saying Bears fans are into it, 49ers fans are into it. I mean, it's all the hot button quarterback discussions of, you know, Justin Fields. I mean, I don't think anybody besides Bears coaches have watched more Justin Fields film than him over the last few years. The Brock Purdy discussion.
And
he's
Caleb
all
Williams,
into.
Probably.
And probably Caleb Williams, yeah. Any interesting takeaways that you have there?
No, I mean, his rankings are actually, I think, the sort of least interesting element of a discussion with JT. Like he's just an interesting guy in terms of his process, in terms of how he views the game, the quarterback position, the league generally. I just think he's a really interesting discussion every time we talk to him.
Yeah, so he doesn't get into, because when you hear, like when you're in an NFL building, you're looking at these prospects through the lens of, we have an offense, we have some very specific things that we do, certain throws that we value more than others, certain ways of seeing the field or whatever it might be that we value more than others. And it's very specific within every building, which is why we always say there's going to be different rankings because of what those things are. He's kind of looking at it through that lens because he has things he wants to see, but there's no specific offense attached to it, right? He always talks about his hypothetical offense. And then it comes down to, I think this always happens in QB evaluation, he described Drake May the way a lot of people are describing Drake May. And Chris Sims described Drake May in a similar way.
Yeah, you've, if you listen to the two
him.
Of them.
I've described him.
Even mechanically, if you listen to Chris and JT, they sort of hit on basically the same thing. Like
something's off on the arm stroke and the footwork.
Right.
Something's off, whatever it might be.
Like JT referring to Spencer Rattler, whose throwing motion is this fluid, you know, beautiful, smooth motion that looks the same every time. And then in particular, I think the word Chris Sims used was segmented.
Yeah.
That Drake May's isn't like that. Instead of being smooth, it's like it's herky-jerky. It seizes in the middle of it sometimes and gets kind of broken up into pieces. You know, JT was saying the same thing. And it's like almost everybody, this is why I think sometimes the draft is fascinating, because there are definitely some times where you see a guy completely differently from somebody else. You're like, I don't see what you're seeing on tape at all. I have no idea where you're getting that from. I don't know what you are watching. The rest of the time, generally speaking, you're seeing the same thing as everyone else, which makes sense, right? It's the same tape, the same guy. It's there. Like, your interpretation of reality should be the same as the next guy that you're watching it with. It's how do you value that, and how do you project that, and how do you think that matters, or the impact that it has on your evaluation of the guy as a prospect.
That's the point I'm trying to make on Drake May, and I feel like I made that same point on Anthony Richardson last year, which was, I don't think the notes, the scouting report, so to speak, is going to look all that different for Anthony Richardson for everybody. You know, elite runner and misses throws and, you know, high upside and the whole thing. And it feels like a lot of people are coming to the same conclusion on Drake May, is missing the layups, and whether it's footwork or the arm stroke or whatever it might be, but also has a ton of special plays on film. Okay, now where do you value that, right? Because one person's going to say, oh, that's fixable, that's footwork. Of course that's fixable. He's only 21, he's only a redshirt sophomore. Like, I'm more in that camp that we'll fix the layups. I love how JT gets disgusted with the bounced hitch. You know, disgusted by that, which I get. Like, you're missing by a mile. Not to relate everything to me, but I had a pitching coach with the Brewers. I threw a pitch behind a batter one time. Behind a batter. It was my first pitch of spring training. I mean, I missed by a mile. And my first whole at-bat of that spring training, I walked a guy in four pitches. And I was just completely out of it. And then I settled in and struck out the next three. Settled in. But I had a pitching coach is talking to me the next day who weren't there. They're like, dude, I heard you threw a ball. Like, I heard you were all over the place yesterday.
Right.
Like, they were spreading the word how how my accuracy was so bad. My control was so bad the day before.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. But there was good stuff after that. You don't understand. I swear I got released that spring. I swear I got released because of a couple bad throws. That's your bounced hitch. Right. There were some people who just can't get over that. Like, I had another coach that year who's like, he was speaking generally to our team, and he was like, if you can't throw a ball, you know, below a guy's head or something, you can't pitch in the big leagues. And I'm like, oh, you're talking to me. I was all over the place yesterday. Like, they got this in their head, and I feel like that's your Drake May bounced hitch here, where there are some people who are just like, that's so bad, we can't work with that. Well, and then other people are going to say, oh, of course, it's footwork, it's mechanics, he's 21, we'll fix it. So where do you value those things?
Again, just to keep, you already kept the streak alive with the Hackenberg reference, but that's kind of where you were. You're like, dude, if you are bouncing multiple wide receiver screens in your tape,
it's Hack never... just had nothing else good to even bring the conversation back. May has all this other great stuff to bring the conversation back,
at least. That was a big part of the sort of overarching narrative of Hackenberg. It's like, if your tape has multiple throws where you are bouncing a wide receiver screen, it's just not going to work. It isn't. Like, your baseline has to be higher than that, because this is the NFL. You can't, you know, you just can't make it work if that's a regular part of your game. That, like, if I call a bubble screen, there's a better than zero chance that it doesn't even make it to the receiver. It hits the ground before it gets there. Like, I can't do anything with that. Now, obviously, Drake May is a very different prospect to Christian Hackenberg. But my point being, if you had simply looked at that and said, I've seen five of those on his tape already, I'm out, you wouldn't have been wrong. You know what I mean? And that's where some people are with Drake May. They're looking at what he's doing, and they're like, I've seen enough of these already that I can't go any further with this. I'm already out.
There's a lot of things I think JT said, too, that kind of came to similar... He had similar things he was wrestling with, which was the Michael Penix last two games, the Texas game. The one thing I didn't mention to him, because he said, hey, Penix doesn't do a good job maybe showing the athleticism on the field. And I completely agree. Like, I went into the college football playoff saying, yeah, Penix isn't really a creator. He's not really a pocket mobility guy. And then in the Texas game, he's over there sidestepping pass rushers. There's really so many, and I know we say this a lot, there's really so many comparisons, similarities to the C.J. Stroud game, where Penix, against Texas, answered a lot of the questions you had. Is he mobile in the pocket? Well, against Texas, he was. And then the Michigan game, again, brings us back down to earth because it all looked pretty bad.
That one is interesting because when I first watched Michael Penix way back at the start of the season when Trev, you know, threw him up as a prospect to watch, one of my notes was actually on the positive side of all that in-pocket athleticism. And so, I said he moves really well in the pocket. He's got this sudden step to avoid traffic, and he can reset and throw. And I was kind of praising the athleticism and, like, the threat that he could pose in that regard without knowing that he had, like, six career rushing yards. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Trev's actually like, oh, actually, like, he never moves. Like, and, you know, that's a negative of his.
Yeah.
I think it's there on tape. That's one area where I would disagree slightly, that I think you actually see signs of that could be a much bigger part of his game in the NFL than it's been in college. Like, obviously, with his injury history and just the way he plays, you don't want to say, all right, you're going to be Daniel Jones now, right? You're a big part of our run game. It's time to saddle up, bring whatever knee straps you need, but you're going to be running the ball five times a game. Like, it's not going to be that. But I feel like that can actually be a threat that he brings to the table that he hasn't really in college.
The comp that I overuse for anybody who is athletic enough to run in a straight line somewhat fast is Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton in the zone read game would have a couple keepers, maybe one a game or one every couple games. It's like, here's 10 yards, just enough to keep the defensive end honest. Dalton was a good runner at TCU.
Yeah.
They ran a lot of QB design run game. Dalton was a very good runner. And that's all you kind of need just to open up the run game a little bit, I think, and you know, again, keep them honest. So Penix can probably do some of that, given the fact that he ran in the 4.5s. So any other thoughts on what he said? He was with you on J.J. McCarthy, maybe on the – it's funny that he had to go to one game to find touch throws.
Yeah, and I think that – I mean, that's the argument in a nutshell, right? It's like, it's not that they don't exist, that you can't find him throwing a pass with touch. That's never been the point. The point is, relative to anybody else, he doesn't do it a lot at all. And the fact that you do need to go and say, hey, if you go watch this game, you can see a couple of touch throws in there. It's like, yeah, if I need to go to a specific game, he doesn't throw a touch.
Well, I highly suggest you go check out JT, the Patreon. Subscribe there. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, QB School. Go find him. A lot of good analysis. Nice soothing voice to walk through his film analysis and everything. It's a lot of fun. Does a great job. Absolutely. Anything else here today?
No, I'm happy with the conversation. I think it was a good discussion. I hope people enjoy it.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again with more PFF NFL podcast.